This is an ABC podcast.
G'day, Signal listeners. It's Matt Bevan here. I just wanted to let you know about my new podcast, China, if you're listening. It's all about the Australia-China relationship and how it's going to shape our lives for decades to come. New episodes come every Tuesday in June. Find it on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Australia loves to see itself as an international COVID success story, and there's a lot of truth to that. But we used to have more company, Taiwan, Thailand, and Vietnam, just to name a few. The thing is, though, in almost every case, that success has given way to a surge in recent months, as new, highly contagious versions of the virus, like the Delta variant, have spread around the world.
Taiwan is currently fighting its worst outbreak of COVID-19 since the beginning of the pandemic.
Thailand is currently grappling with its third and most serious wave of COVID-19 since the pandemic began.
There's been a new surge in cases, with more than half of Vietnam's total number of confirmed cases surfacing in the past month.
And the parallels with Australia's situation are hard to ignore. I'm Stephen Smiley.
And I'm Ange Lavoie-Pierre. And today on The Signal, the cautionary tale for Australia in Asia's latest surge. All right. Zoe, would you mind terribly introducing yourself to begin with?
I'm Zoe Ford and I'm the ABC's Southeast Asia correspondent based in Bangkok.
Yeah, so Southeast Asia correspondent implies a kind of roving nature of the job, but you're very stationary at the moment. Where are you as we're talking?
Very stationary, and I'm sitting in my apartment in Bangkok. I only live about 200 or 300 metres away from the ABC's bureau here, but I'm working from home, as has been the request by the government here as it tries to get on top of this third COVID wave. And it's very strange as I look out the window of my apartment because I can see about seven cars and five motorbikes, which for anybody who's ever been to Bangkok would know is highly unusual for the streets of Bangkok. Mm.
Let's talk about how that happened. So there was a point not that long ago where Thailand was sort of held up as one of the few international success stories in terms of the response to COVID. How long ago was that, and when did things start to change?
Well, that was all of 2020, really. And the first case of COVID-19 was detected here in Thailand. But the country managed to get on top of things quickly. It locked down. It did some vigorous testing. And there were only about 7,000 cases for all of 2020 and 60 deaths. So it was a remarkable outcome for a population here of nearly 70 million people. But things began to change then. Before Christmas, there was an outbreak in a seafood market, around 29,000 cases, 34 deaths. But again, that was controlled reasonably quickly. But that brings us to April, the 1st of April, and there was a new outbreak detected in Bangkok's infamous nightclub district, two clubs in particular that were popular with VVIPs, diplomats, business people, politicians. So the outbreak began there. And then in the middle of April, Thailand had its traditional Songkran festival. This is the Thai New Year, and it's when people traditionally go home to their families in the provinces to celebrate. It's also when there's normally water throwing, the traditional water throwing, which everybody in this country loves, but that was cancelled for the second year in a row. But the family gatherings did continue, and that really was the tipping point. Numbers shot up after that.
Thailand is tightening COVID-19 curbs in a bid to fend off a new wave of infections ahead of next week's Songkran New Year festival.
Authorities have already forbidden the famous water fights. However, unlike last year when it was entirely cancelled, it is still taking place this year despite a very rapid spike of COVID-19 cases blamed on nightlife venues here in Bangkok and on the more contagious UK strain.
Okay, and when we talk about this surge, this wave in Thailand, what kind of numbers are we seeing?
The daily case numbers are between 2,000 and 3,000 a day, and that's not as high as some other countries, of course, but because it's spreading so fast, that's why Thailand is so concerned. And to put it into perspective, during this third wave, there's been about 150,000 cases, and that's 84% of all cases that Thailand's had, and there's been 1,200 deaths, and that is 92% of all deaths.
So So there are a couple of factors at play here. There's the fact that the virus moved pretty quickly from those wealthy circles Mazoe mentioned into Thailand's slums, where social distancing and access to healthcare are just not possible. Then there's the introduction of the new Alpha variant, which is also referred to sometimes as the UK variant. It's the main strain for now, but the more contagious Delta strain is starting to come through as well. And on top of that, Thailand's vaccine rollout was very slow to get started.
Thailand had done really well in 2020, so it hadn't ordered enough vaccines and it's scrambling to get them. And it's also been criticised for relying on locally manufactured vaccines instead of ordering them in. There's been confusing information about the registration for vaccinations. There's an app for some people, but not for others. Some hospitals will take registrations, some other hospitals won't. Will foreign nationals be part of it? Well, today they will, tomorrow they won't, the next day they will. So it's been really, really confusing. But on the upside, the vaccination program has begun. They did health workers and vulnerable groups first. Then the mass vaccination program began this week. And in the first 2 hours, the government says it vaccinated 143,000 people and it opened 986 vaccination centres across the country. So it is desperately trying to play catch up now.
Wow.
Do we have any idea where the percentages are up to? You know, what percentage of Thailand's population now has been fully vaccinated?
It would have to be around 3-4% now that this mass vaccination program has gone underway. But the government still says it hopes to have 70% of the population done by the end of the year.
Now, we know that Thailand's not the only country in the region that has kind of deteriorated after initially enjoying a lot of success against the virus. Let's talk about Vietnam next. How did Vietnam's success story go and what's changed there?
Well, Vietnam was incredibly successful in 2020. It went in hard and fast. It closed down its international borders. It tested aggressively. It was doing lots of contact tracing. And the communication in Vietnam was really, really good. There was a really catchy song about hand washing and social distancing that you might remember. Then TikTok videos of the dance that went with the song went viral as well. So, you know, people really got behind the public health and safety messages in Vietnam and they did what they were told. They stayed home. So even though there were a couple of outbreaks, they were contained pretty quickly. But then things changed again at the end of April and there was a few factors here. And probably the most interesting one is this hybrid variant of the Alpha and Delta variants of the coronavirus. It's said to spread far more quickly than previous variants. And of course, low vaccination rates again, because the country thought it was doing so well and it didn't need to order as many vaccines. There's outbreaks in factories and tight-knit communities. And more than half of all of the cases in Vietnam since the pandemic began have occurred in the past month.
And as we mentioned earlier, plenty of other parts of the region have gone the same way. Taiwan was hovering around zero cases and blew out to hundreds a day by late last month, triggering new lockdowns. And Cambodia has been on a similar trajectory.
I think the pattern here is early success, then the virus returns, there's a slow vaccine rollout, a new wave that's more infectious. And when you put all that together, you know, you're sitting in a really tough situation where, you know, these countries that did extremely well are now back under lockdown or certainly with very tough restrictions and lots of people are getting sick and dying. So, yeah, that early success, I guess, and following complacency would be the pattern.
Yeah, and it's hard not to listen to that list and think how much there's a cautionary tale there for Australia. What do you think that we could learn from these countries that you know, we're doing so well and now find themselves in this situation today?
Yeah, look, I'm not a health expert. I'm not a scientist, but I am a person who lived in Australia when things were under control. I moved to Thailand when things were pretty much under control and now they're not. So I reckon the lesson here is things change and they change very, very quickly.
Thank you.
And when Mazzoli says very quickly, she means at roughly twice the rate it used to. And that's because of the Delta variant, which, of course, is now here in Australia too.
We know that it's basically around the world now. It's in over 60 countries now. And what happened in the UK, where they had a number of different variants in circulation, is because it seems to be the most transmissible of the variants right now in circulation, it's taken over. So it's becoming the dominant strain. It looks like the same thing's going to happen with the Delta variant, that it's not going to be too far from now that it becomes the variant that you see almost everywhere in the world.
This is Professor of Epidemiology, Nancy Baxter. She's the head of the School of Population and Global Health at the University of Melbourne.
So when we talk about the Delta variant, what exactly are we referring to there?
Well, COVID-19 is a virus, and it's a virus that relies on human cells to replicate. So what it does is it attaches itself to human cells, and it uses our replicating mechanisms to make itself. What happens over time is, you know, with the virus trying to replicate itself as fast as it possibly can, mistakes can be made. So that shows up in changes to the genetic code of the virus. Most of the time, those genetic changes just kind of die out. They're not very successful, or they don't change how the virus works. They're just not really important. Something like the difference between blue eyes and green eyes. But sometimes they affect a part of the virus itself that actually changes how the virus works. Either makes it so that it's easier to spread, or makes it more deadly, or makes it so that it kind of is able to evade vaccines or natural immunity better.
And that's how all the variants we've heard about so far came to be, including the Delta variant that's driving a lot of the surges now.
So the Delta variant is a variant that was first identified in India. It's now throughout the world and has a number of mutations. So we were concerned initially when this variant started becoming more common in India that it was more transmissible. And that's indeed what we found, that the mutations in the spike protein of this Delta variant have made it so that it spreads more easily. And just to put that into context, you know, COVID 1.0, the first COVID that we saw when the pandemic started, for every one person infected with COVID, they would spread it to about 2.5 people. The next very common variant that we saw was, it used to be called the UK variant, now called the Alpha variant. So it was more infectious than the original. So for every one person infected, they could infect probably about 3.5 people. The Delta variant is more infectious than that. I mean, it's still, our data are still emerging, but it seems like for every one person infected, they infect on average 5 people. That's if there's nothing going on in the community trying to prevent transmission. So no masks, no social distancing, none of that. But just think about that. This variant is now twice as infective as the original variant that we faced, which was already extremely infective. So this is a big problem.
So an R rate of 5 is a big step up from the first generation of this virus. But then there's an entirely separate question of how deadly it is in comparison to the original.
We don't actually know. There's some suggestion in the UK that there may be some increased what we call virulence. It might be worse for people if they get it. But the whole thing about infectious diseases is, you know, it's more important how many people, how transmissible it is. Because even if you had a virus that was the same, had the same deadliness as the original COVID-19, if it's, you know, twice as transmissible, if you can catch it twice as easily, you're going to have a lot more people get really sick and die just because, you know, more people are infected. A virus wants to spread to as many people as it possibly can. It wants to kind of proliferate. So actually killing people, making people super sick and going into isolation and not being in circulation really isn't to the benefit of the virus. So there's not really what we call a strong evolutionary push for viruses to evolve that way. Usually they evolve more in the transmission part of things than in the virulence or the deadliness.
And then there's the theory that's been circulating that this variant is more likely to affect children and younger adults than others. And Nancy says that is still a bit of an unknown too, but there are a couple of other possible explanations for the spike amongst young people.
Because it's more transmissible, you know, to everyone, that means more children are going to get it. Whether children have a different effect of this variant than the original variant, if it's more transmissible, it's going to be more transmissible to them as well. The other thing in the UK, when you think about it, they've vaccinated a lot of people, but what group have they not vaccinated? They haven't vaccinated children. So if you're going to see the virus, it's going to be most commonly in the groups that haven't been vaccinated. And so that's children.
So we are still learning about the Delta variant, but what we know so far about how transmissible it is should worry us. And Nancy says there are a few easy lessons Australia should learn from the rest of the world's experience so far.
We don't have the same margin of error. We just can't make mistakes because it'll take advantage of those mistakes just because it's so much more transmissible. One mistake becomes amplified to a much greater degree than it would have with earlier variants. So we need to focus on things that can help us control an airborne virus. Everyone has to get on the same page that it is airborne, that's the dominant way of transmission, and that we need to manage it. The other thing is our hotel quarantine system. It's still not perfect. We still haven't focused enough on ventilation and the airborne nature of this virus. And finally, we all need to get serious about vaccination. We need to get vaccinated. I know people have concerns about AstraZeneca, and you know, I understand their concerns, but you know, right now, every week that goes by, we are at risk of a major outbreak in Australia. And by that, I don't mean a major outbreak that leads to a lockdown. I mean an outbreak that leads to a lockdown and a lot of illness and death. So we need to get vaccinated as soon as we can, and you need to take the vaccine that's available. We need to get serious about it. We need to stop being complacent about it. And we need to all understand that it is a race. It definitely is a race.
That is The Signal for today. Thanks very much for listening. If you'd like to drop Ange or me a line, our email is thesignal@abc.net.au.
And we'll be back tomorrow. We'll catch you then.
Bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.